Blog Talk Radio.
Discussion of the dynamic and volatile world of writing, publishing, and marketing of the written word. I'm your host, Robert Batista. Today's guests are the dynamic team of Alan Harris and Jason Gray, better known as Harris Gray. Welcome, Harris Gray, to the Author's Lab.
Robert, it is great to be here.
Yeah, thanks for having us again.
Oh, man, it's a pleasure. Man, guys, it's been a minute since we've last spoken. There's so much to catch up on. Let me first ask you to educate those first-timers tuning in on the history of how you guys first met and got together.
You bet. We go back, so we are in Castle Rock, Colorado. My family and I moved to Castle Rock in 2000. By that time, Jason was up and running for a year or two with his coffee shop, Crowfoot Valley Coffee, here in Castle Rock, and it was the oasis that I was looking for. We came from Minneapolis, where coffee shops were here and there, and I was a little worried moving to Castle Rock that there wouldn't be such a place or that I might have to resort to you-know-where, and there was Crowfoot. So started to that was my hangout for my writing time, and then as I would sit there and write in my little corner nook that looked out on the Castle Rock, the eponymous rock that gives the town its name, I would from time to time overhear Jason telling tales to his customers, and one thing led to another, and I just got worried that all these tales were going told but not memorialized, and a lot of those tales involved high-risk situations for Jason, whether he'd intended to or not. That's usually how the story went. So I thought, you know, before it's too late, we should get these stories down. So I mentioned that that maybe just because he should write them down. And a day later, I show up at my little nook, and on my seat is a little yellow pad filled with stories, front to back with his stories. And so I typed them up, and we collaborated on the editing. And then at the last second, which kind of goes to what I think is the genius of Jason, we decided to add recipes to each story. A lot of the stories revolved around fishing. So every one of the stories has their little short stories with a fish, some sort of a seafood recipe associated, and we called it "And We Fished Some More," and that was the start.
Wow! So, do you want to add anything?
Well, yeah, I mean, it was just kind of like one of those things where Alan did that, and then at the same time he was always writing on his own, and one day soon after that. In my mind, I already figured we were writing partners. I don't think Alan thought we were. And he asked me to read a little bit of a story he was writing. And I had it for a couple of days and made my own little edits and additions and stuff, I think that he didn't really know I was doing that. But I was trying to help him anyways. And then next thing you know, I feel like he had no choice but to start writing with me on a permanent basis.
It was meant to be, Robert.
It sure was. It was a match, as they say, made in heaven. So your short work, Cheesy Story, was featured in an anthology from Saul Negris Press. What's it about? What's Cheesy Story about? And did you know it would be in the anthology when you wrote it, or did that come later?
So Alan and I wrote a short story called Cheesy Story at a writer's conference. So we were given a writer prompt, as they do a lot of times at the writer's conference, and all the writers who were there were asked to write, I think it was like a 500-word short story, and we wrote something that we thought was hilarious and dark and at the same time, and then we decided to go ahead and expand on it. And then a few years later, we were asked by a friend of ours to enter a contest for a Colorado a collaboration for different authors in Colorado that had to do with I can't remember, it was Saul Negris was the publisher on it, and it was the person's name now, the
H.P. Lovecraft.
Oh yeah, so they're supposed to be kind of H.P. Lovecraft sort of story,
right.
And so we
little did we know we had written an H.P. Lovecraftian tale.
Yeah, and so we entered the contest, and we found out like a year later that we were one of the, I think, 15 authors that were in the book for short stories.
And, you know, it's a shout-out, too, Robert, to the Pikes Peak Writers Conference where that original contest took place. You just never know how – Jason and I are sometimes a little resistant about attending conferences, but it pays off in all kinds of ways, maybe not the obvious direct way, landing a publishing contract, but the contacts you make and things like this, the unexpected benefits, they really make it worthwhile.
Exactly. In any field that you're in my estimation, it's all about networking. It's all about, as you said, contacting. So, wow, that's awesome. I understand you are currently in discussions with the award-winning director Brian Malone to turn Cheesy Story into a short film. Wow. How did this connection take place with Brian Malone, and how are the discussions going?
Brian Malone has been he lives in Castle Rock. He's an award-winning director. He does a lot of stuff for the school district. He has done stuff for local television and national television as well, CBS.
Right.
And he approached us in December, early mid-December, and said he had read the short story and loved it and thinks that it'd be a great short movie. And I think that both Alan and I think that Alan was more dubious than I was. I think that, you know, this kind of thing has happened a handful of times, and you always think that you struck it white hot and then it goes away. So I was all excited, and Alan wasn't as excited as I was. And then right before New Year's, he emailed me and said, hey, let's do this for sure. And I got excited, and Alan didn't again. And then we didn't hear a word for about a month or so. And then I started thinking, well, maybe I was wrong. And then he emailed in like mid February saying that he was sorry that he had like two or three different contracts that he had to fulfill. But as soon as he was done, he would get back in touch.
So we're pretty much a go, but now we have to decide whose house gets burned down. That's the last technical detail, which is a little bit of a spoiler alert, I guess.
It is a spoiler,
sure,
but right now, Alan and I are we're right when the show gets done, we're going to Rochambeau to see whose house gets burned down.
You know, I remember, guys, the last time we spoke, you guys were knee-deep into your Vampire Vic trilogy, which was a new twist on the traditional vampire story, combining humor and emotion. How did that trilogy series work out for you guys? And would Vampire Vic rise again and live to seek blood in other stories? As we authors know, there are some characters that you just can't keep down.
And yet that I think that does describe Vic for at least a trilogy. So we had great results with in terms of sales and just general publicity on the first book. We were one of indie readers' top 10 picks for the year. And then we wrote the second and third books of the trilogy came out, and since we talked to you a year or two later, we love the trilogy. It came out exactly the way we wanted it. It was that,
right,
that kind of character who just demanded that kind of a full tale and ending. But it's a challenge. It speaks to the challenge. We've experienced that. Of getting the word out and keeping that buzz going and finding the right marketing attack and partnerships to make it work. So that's definitely been our challenge. We're hoping that we've got some latent fire there still smoldering that'll erupt here coming down the pike. But that's definitely one of our challenges that we continue to work on, is building that audience. That solid and ever-growing audience that makes it possible to leverage book one into book two and there on, mm-hmm. And so on from there.
Since again we last spoke, we've gone through two monumental elections. One of them inspired you to write The Imperfect Compromise, where a constitutional crisis forces Trump and Hillary to share the presidency for a year. What a concept. How in the world did you guys come up with this story, and what were your intentions when you decided to bring this satirical story into the public?
Well, I guess, what happened was, before the election, everything was getting pretty contentious between Hillary and Trump. And we thought it was kind of that what would happen if the election was really, really close. And so we worked really hard on trying to get this book out right before the election. We ended up getting it out about 6 weeks before the election. And we had in the book, we had it kind of the opposite of what really happened. We had Trump winning the popular vote and Hillary winning the Electoral College. And what happened in the book, we had it where Trump and Hillary wouldn't kind of come to terms with who won the election. And so there was kind of riots and that kind of thing going on. And so the book itself. Takes, we think, a funny view, but also it's a pretty serious read at the same time about what would happen if they had to share the office of president.
Yeah, so they each got 6 months in office, and at the same time we thought this was essentially our voter's guide, how we thought. So as much as you have just two perfect characters in Trump and Hillary, they do all the work for you. As long as you're true to their personalities and the themes that they live by, you've got a story in the making. So we wanted to give everybody – we did, like Jason said, we spent a lot of time, too, thinking about how we think each of them would behave in office and how the world and the nation would progress. So it was our voter's guide of sorts to help those who may have been on the fence. I don't know if anybody in America was on the fence 6 weeks before the election, and I don't know if anybody still is on the fence. We seem to be clearly on one side or the other. But it was a blast to write, and they're contrasting that hit number three on Amazon's political fiction list in no time. So that's been our most successful book by far, and it's launched the next stage in what we're working on right now. I think it gave us that launching pad to work on the series that is currently in production.
Yes, I remember those times. I remember those debates. And speaking of voter feedback, did The Imperfect Compromise get the reaction that you guys hope for? We're not talking about sales. We're talking about the political reaction that you guys had hoped for.
No, that's a really good question. I mean, it was – so we wrote it and really in a view that we weren't either Democrat or Republican. And I think that there were Democrats who read the book and thought that we weren't hard enough on Trump, and then there were Republicans who read the book and thought we weren't hard enough on Hillary. It was just kind of funny because we tried to make sure that we kind of played the middle ground and devil's advocate on on most of the stuff that was going on in the book. And I think that people who were reading it wanted us to get one side or the other. So I think there was some frustration from some people, but I think that a lot of people really liked how we didn't take a political slant or a political view on it. We just wrote it how we thought either person would react to different things going on in the country.
Yeah, as far as we were concerned, that meant success. We had done what we had set out to accomplish, which was to hopefully provide an accurate picture of both. And let people's partisan tendencies play out and read into, you know, the story however they saw it.
So let's talk about the other monumental election, and I do mean, in my estimation, monumental in every sense of the word. That of your election, Jason, to the office of mayor of the town of Castle Rock, Colorado. Wow. Jason, kudos and congratulations. Of course, it's belated, sir. Jason, talk about how you achieved this colossal achievement.
No, it was great. So back in June of 2018, I had one of the council members come to me and ask me to run for mayor. And I hadn't really thought about it. I was on a few different boards, downtown merchant boards and economic development boards in Castle Rock, and he asked me to run for mayor, and I kind of just, you know, said thank you and hung the phone up. And the next day, the current mayor at that time called me and said, hey, you should run for mayor. And I said thank you, and then next thing you know, I had another person ask me, and so I ended up running. And I truly believe I couldn't have done it with a lot of people's help, but Alan was integral in that, and he wrote a lot of things for me. I would come up with ideas, and then Alan would pin them for me. It was really, really great. It was a very close election. There's almost 70,000 people in Castle Rock now. We had our highest voter turnout of all time, and there was 28,000 votes cast, and I won by 57 votes.
Wow. Man,
and Robert, it was a testament, too, to the – just the legacy that Jason has built here. I honestly feel very blessed to have stumbled onto Crowfoot, moved here, and gotten into the Crowfoot family. Jason's business, his coffee shop, it was never more evident than during the election of the support network and just the love and the extended family that Jason has built over the years. All the people that came together to work to get Jason into office, whether it was calling people, website, getting out the vote drives, Facebooking, just everything that goes into an election campaign on a shoestring budget, just built on people's excitement and affection. So it really was a beautiful thing to see how, and he had. And to boot, Jason has been involved in the community for so long, and he's the busiest guy you know, and always the first guy to step up and volunteer for, say, the Economic Development Committee or Board, the Downtown Development or Downtown Partnership Association, all the things that make a community great. Jason's been involved in that from day one, and this was the culmination of that. It made perfect sense, and Castle Rock has the best mayor they could ever hope for.
Wow, that was pretty nice,
sure.
Wasn't it?
We
get some great stories out of this, Robert.
Oh, man, I can't wait.
The writing potential.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes. Jason, how does being mayor of a growing town like Castle Rock affect your artistic collaboration with Alan?
Well, I got to say that Alan has been very patient with me, so we were writing pretty hard together up until I started running for office, and Alan has been kind of a lone wolf on it. I feel, you know, really bad about not helping him much, but hopefully here and there.
I feel bad too, Robert.
Here and there I can help when I try, and hopefully we're collecting enough stories that we have stories to write for the next 20 years. But, you know, it's been busy. I mean, I'm fortunate enough that I have really, really good employees and that I'm able to kind of come and go to my work as needed. And at the same time, I can, be mayor when needed as well. So it's a good collaboration still between myself and the town, and Alan so far hasn't disowned me, so that's really good. And it's been great. I mean, Castle Rock itself, I mean, I'm not sure how much you know about Castle Rock, but we average 3 home sales a day in Castle Rock. So we are growing like a weed, and we're trying to figure out our growth issues and trying to grow in a sustainable, manageable way, and I think we're doing that.
Yeah, my son went out to Colorado with his wife and came back just glowing, saying that would be some place he can definitely live. I've heard so many good things about Colorado. So Alan,
that's usually the way it works.
Yeah. Alan, how is it like now for you in doing a lot of the heavy lifting for the Harris Gray brand? How do you spread yourself?
He's got a strong back.
I'm sure.
All those crunches are paying off finally.
Uh-huh.
You know, Robert, it's the beauty of the partnership. I definitely see it that way. You know, as much as you'd love life to be consistent and even, it never is. And so instead of, you know, if we were each solo writers, one career would have to be put on hold. And given that we are a partnership and a team, we just see everything we do as, and we want everything, all of our work to be a fusion of both of us. We don't want anybody to be able to tell who wrote what. So fear not, Jason will get his chance to, and already has. So as we've been working through this time travel series, our latest project, Jason's been involved in the creative aspects and continuing to, as I keep providing him updates and giving him snapshots of what we're doing. That feedback and that kind of creative injection, it makes all the difference. He has a completely different perspective than I do. So even just talking about it allows me to launch and take it in a different direction that I might not have or certainly would not ever have thought of without him. So the partnership's still alive and kicking and going strong. It just adjusts. You just adjust the balance given the circumstances. There will come a time when Jason's back will be called into duty.
You know, so I, like you two men, have no concept of the word fear. So no, I fear not. I know exactly what you're saying. So let's talk about the business, gentlemen, of publishing and its massive volatility and ever-evolving nature. Have you guys ever independently published your books, or have you guys always gone through the mainstream houses? How did your publishing work for you?
Yeah, so it's been a mixture. So like you referenced, the compilation of short stories that we were happy and fortunate enough to be a part of is a good example of the traditional route. We definitely have gone the independent route as well. I alluded to that with the Vampire Vic series, which we did self-publish. We hired a publicist. We maybe goes without saying, but hired editors. We had and not to mention cover design and, you know, book design, all the associated creative elements. We've been very dedicated and ready to bring in the talent where we don't have it, where we have shortfalls. So we've been very pleased with the output, but the marketing side is the challenge than going the independent route.
Right.
As you know, that's the key to building and opportunities like this that you're giving us, and hopefully vice versa. It's like you mentioned, it's a great way and just an extremely important and necessary way to build that base of folks that know about you and want to learn more.
So many readers, especially millennials, are reading now stories and articles on their cell phones. Do you think this radically changes the future of how we write and publish our books, guys?
Well, it's just one more way to read to get out and get reading. I mean, I think that, you know, we want people to read our books, whether it's, you know, on their tablets or on their phones, or we actually have one of our books. Is this one, Alan? One of our books that has an audio book to it. So we were fortunate to get Paul Rohrer, who's a local actor, director, and voice artist in Castle Rock as well, and he did one of our books. And it's just one more way of getting the word out there. In some ways, I think that makes it more difficult because there's no magic bullet anymore. I think that just getting a publishing house to do it and then having them market your book isn't the way that is done anymore. I mean, there's a lot of people out there who do a good job of self-publishing, but there's also a lot of publishing houses that do a really good job. But I think you really have to look at all the multimedia and all the different ways to get it out there.
And Robert, you know, it also, to your point, I think one of our takeaways, what we learned from The Imperfect Compromise, we didn't necessarily set out to do it that way, but it was a very short book, 15,000 words approximately. So basically a bite size, sit down in a couple sessions and crank through it. And I think that really is geared to and is the format that we are following now with the time travel series that we're writing. We want reviewers, for instance, to be able to just sit down, crank through that book, and get their review posted and get the word of mouth firing away and multiplying as soon and as rapidly as possible. So I think when talking about, you know, the device reading the books on the smartphones and whatever devices, I think in a lot of ways the shorter and sweeter the better. At least to have a nice catalog of books that fit that bill to give to tap that market and to appeal to millennials that are looking for something that's a little quickly more easily digested than one of the big heavy literary tomes.
Yeah, I tell you the books now that are being published are quick hits in my estimation, you know, short stories, novellas, micro stories, flash fiction, you know, because the attention span of a lot of readers nowadays are just dropping and dropping and dropping.
Don't you think? There's just so much out there.
Exactly. And like you said, of any age, because I find it with myself. I don't have time to read long-winded stories. Like right now, in my estimation, War and Peace could never be published now. It could never be published today. You have to break it up into like maybe 20 different books.
Well, yeah, and then you serialize it and let people binge read, I guess, but launch them all at the same time.
Exactly.
And we've talked about that too for the. And, you know, I'm kind of interested in what you think, Robert, for the time travel series. We thought about that, putting them out instead of sequentially in the traditional sense, to throw them out there and all at once and let readers binge on them.
Yeah, I think that's a fantastic idea. So on the heels of the success of your political gem, The Imperfect Compromise, you just completed the 5-book Trump time travel series, as you mentioned. President Donald Trump discovers the U.S. government owns 2 time travel devices. Now he is going to make the past great again. #MPGA. So what should your fans expect from this hilarious sounding series?
Well, I mean, we take a pretty outlandish, I think, funny concept, and then the stories themselves are pretty serious. You know, I mean, the first book, I mean, I think it takes something funny, but it takes Trump goes back in time to save Martin Luther King. And not for all the reasons that you should save Martin Luther King, but because he doesn't want the holiday. And, you know, and
we've
so,
got too many holidays, Robert. We got to get back to work in this country.
And so that's kind of premises. And it sounds like a farce. But it really isn't. When it gets down to it, Trump time travels with a U.S. agent, and she is a
she hates him.
And she doesn't like him for one, but she's also a political major who did her thesis on Martin Luther King, and we take that part of it very seriously, and I think it's really well written by Alan. a little bit by me. But Alan, I love the idea of it. It was really, really interesting. I think that it has enough humor that you chuckle, but it also has some very, very serious moments as well. And I just think it's, I mean, it's I would say our best work, but it's Alan's best work, I think, as well. I mean, it's a lot of fun to write.
So I know you guys are starting the search for the right publishing house for your Trump time travel series. How's that coming?
We are, you know, we're just getting going down that path. We have in the couple feelers that we've sent out as we were writing this to gauge interest. We heard the general feedback was very interesting and exciting concept, but my publishing house is staying away from Trump right now. So I think that'll be the kicker, is finding the house that's willing to just dive in there and go for the entertainment value. Go for all the things that the book represents, and all the what we hope are good discussions, just prompting good debates on civil rights in America and
right.
What role we all play. So I think that's going to be the hurdle, but we're really excited to start talking to the editors and agents. And find that right match.
I mean, this interview just came on right at the right time. I mean, Alan literally finished the series, you know, maybe 2 weeks ago. I mean, we had to go over some things together still on it, but I mean, we're just now really starting to get cranking on trying to find someone to publish it for us.
Right, right. Wow, I'm sure you guys are going to accomplish your goal. So you guys have been super, super busy since we last spoke, and I am so glad that we reconnected. So in closing, if people want to get in contact with you, can you give out your website address and any other contact information?
You bet. So the website is harrisgray.com. You can find us. All of our books are on Amazon. You can visit our author page there. Or you can start with Vampire Vic, for instance. You will find us in short order. Jason's fallen down a little bit on our social media work. He's been our man out there. I love Jason's style. So you might not see a lot of current tweets, but take a look at our website. We've got videos out there. We do a lot of fun stuff just to partly to entertain ourselves and partly to try to promote the book. So yeah, please take a look. And Robert, we are so pleased that you are back in business and asked us to come on.
No, it was great. I mean, it was really neat to reconnect with you. And you know, we are on Twitter on, I think it's Harris and Gray. Harris and Gray. And you know, we're out there. We're trying to get back out there even more. So between my coffee shop and Mayor and Alan's busy schedule, hopefully we can get out there and make it happen.
Oh, I have one last question. Jason, this is for you.
Yes, sir.
Any word of a Dunkin' Donuts coming to Castle Rock in the near future?
I hope not. We already have plenty of Starbucks, so I'm hoping that Dunkin' Donuts stays far away.
I got that from the website. People want to know. So, This has been the Author's Lab with me, Robert Batista. My stories, The City Game and My Baby Has No Name, can be read for free online at Booksy.com. My guests have been the multifaceted dynamic duo, Alan Harris and Mayor Jason Gray, a.k.a. Harris Gray. Thank you so much, guys, for being my guests on the Author's Lab.
It was our pleasure. Thanks, Robert.
We had a great time. Good night. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.